What do gunpowder, the compass, and the printing press have in common? Sir Francis Bacon, credited as one of the founders of modern-day science, once wrote that these were the three inventions that changed the world forever. The invention of the printing press at the start of the Renaissance period made it easy to share text in the domains of art and science, and improved access to knowledge. But back in the day, those Renaissance people were living in 2D. While today, in the information age, we have the 3D printing press!
Hooray! Yay!
Now you can print just about anything, from your favorite Marvel action figures to your cat. In the medical field, you may have already seen news of scientists 3D printing organ transplants in space. But what if we could reinvent the quintessential archetype of the physician, the stethoscope? And what if we could improve access to essential medical equipment all over the world, just like what the printing press did for Renaissance texts? To answer these questions on this two-part series on hashtag health, we've invited two very special guests from GLIA, an organization that has been at the forefront of these initiatives. In today's episode, we'll introduce you to GLIA and its team, and learn more about their projects to address health disparities, including during their response to the COVID-19 pandemic.
My name is Tarek Labani. I'm an emergency physician, and I work with Raiden. In terms of GLIA, my role there really is as the medical director, just to make sure that everything is safe from a medical perspective and make sure that things are working medically. You know, this is a project that mixes these three fundamental dynamics, one of which is the manufacturing, the other one of which is the medicine, and then the third of which is kind of the politics. So we really need people who are strong in one or more of these domains to bring them all together.
I'm Raiden Garapik. I'm an M3 third year medical student at Schulich School of Medicine and Dentistry. So I'm currently in my clerkship year. I actually started working with GLIA in my first year after coming across the organization and a project they were working on and just emailing and saying, hey, how can I get involved? This sounds awesome. It was awesome. And here I am 2 years later still. So I've worked in a few capacities and research, both part-time and over the summer, device development, running the 3D printers, admin, PR, all that fun kind of stuff.
Now that we've introduced our two guests, let's learn more about GLIA's mission statement.
GLIA's mission statement and ethos is equal access to equal care. And it was conceived in response to the realization that even access to medicine doesn't necessarily mean access to equal and high quality care. There are a lot of places in the world in which physicians are there and they're willing, but they're unable to provide high quality medical care as a result of limitations outside of their control, resources, situations, the environment, et cetera. And GLIA was developed in response to that directly, is taking situations in which medical care is there and making it of high quality and low cost and equal access to everybody. So GLIA was in direct relation to that kind of gap in the quality of medical care at the fault of no one but the situation.
There are many reasons why a country may have poor access to high-quality healthcare. There are two separate elements here that Raiden mentioned. The first is access. According to an article in the Annals of the New York Academy of Sciences, low to middle-income countries that account for 90% of the global burden of disease only account for 12% of global health spending. High-income countries also spend 100 times more per capita on healthcare than low-income countries. The same article argues that one important determinant of healthcare status is a country's political stability, and countries that suffer from conflict fare much worse than their counterparts. Gaza is one region of the world that has been afflicted by conflict, where GLIA is committed to providing healthcare resources. The second element Raiden mentioned is high-quality healthcare. Even the best doctors are limited in the care they can provide without high-quality equipment. The World Health Organization estimates that 70% of medical devices designed for use in the developed world don't work as well in the developing world. A shocking 96% of imported medical equipment stop working within 5 years of donation, with the most significant barrier being a lack of spare parts. For example, if a filter needs to be replaced every 6 months, the whole device would be unusable after 6 months. As we discussed in our episode #voluntourism, although service trips make much-needed services available in the short term, the effects are not lasting. This is like giving a man a fish to eat for one day. Giving low-cost and high-quality equipment is better, like giving a man fishing rods and bait. Giving a 3D printer with the publicly available blueprints to print medical equipment and the replacement spare parts is like giving him a lifetime free membership to Bass Pro Shops. It's important to provide countries with the means to focus and improve on the healthcare priorities that they identify within their local health and resource context. GLIA is doing this by collaborating with local partners in Gaza within a diverse team.
The current team is actually very, very diverse. So it ranges from Tarek as the medical director to myself as a medical student in research roles. We have engineers from places like Canada here, the States, Gaza, Germany in the past as well, who work to develop, design, and implement the devices, creating the coding so that it can be uploaded and accessible to everyone, designing the device, and then validating it as well. And then, of course, we have an admin team as well. So the wonderful people behind the scenes who make sure that people are aware of what GLIA is, what we do, and even who work with, you know, the governments, the limitations in terms of sending the campaigns to ensure that the devices we're creating are getting where they need to go. So it's a wide team with a very diverse group of people, but working together kind of for that common cause and making it happen.
Because the project runs as an open source project, we kind of run on platforms that are also open source. And because of our attempts to kind of keep things really inexpensive, we were running basically digitally from the get-go.
We'll pause right here, because you may be wondering, open source, what's that? Well, have you ever used apps like Mozilla Firefox or VLC Media Player? Those apps are open source, and it means that anyone around the world can access, modify, and share their source code. So when we talk about open source medical equipment, this means the designs, which are 3D printable, can be accessed, modified, and shared globally. We'll hear a deeper discussion of the benefits of open source medicine throughout this two-part series.
So we were collaborating digitally from the get-go, both out of a financial necessity. The project was very much a skunkworks, and also out of a necessity based on the distance. To collaborate with people halfway across the world, the most effective way to do it in 2013 was to do it digitally. So that's a big reason for why it is that we started that way. It made it very easy to transition. And of course, with every year, the technology has made collaboration easier and easier. Whereas Zoom meetings didn't really exist in 2013, they're very easy to do now. And the connection has become even better. We use other tools, obviously happy to dive into the weeds with you, but the key there is that they're all open source because we want to support the ecosystem and the ethos. We don't want to try to build something that's open on a background of stuff that's not open, which has helped us really to improve the environment and the ecosystem around us, not just what makes our tools, but the things that make our team possible too.
What's the process involved from a project's conceptualization to use on real patients in the field?
To speak to where the idea for an initial project comes from is it's identifying that gap in the provision of healthcare. It's looking at an actual situation on the ground, noticing the things that are missing, the gaps, and thinking, how can we create a bridge across this? How can we create something to fill this need? And then the idea from the project stems directly from that need. once that idea is there, it comes to the team here, and everyone from engineers to physicians to the research team work on creating a device that is not only very good at what it does, but is also easy to make with a 3D printer and low cost with things that can be found in most situations. Once that's done, you move on to the validation. So here in London, especially, we've run quite a few studies on the devices, making sure that they work the way we want them to, and they are of the highest possible quality, which they are. And after that, it moves into the clinical feasibility. So does this actually work? Can people make this where they are? The codes are uploaded. People give their input. We've had multiple people from all over the world print the devices and come back with feedback as well. So it's a continuously evolving process. And then once that's done and the device is there, it will continue, you know, to get better. It's open source. People will make it better outside of Glia as well. It's a team effort. But the long story short is that need that's identified, Glia's devices are created to fill that gap. And once that's done, we have a very good device that can be used in every situation.
I'm sure at this point in the podcast, the burning question on everyone's mind is, what are some of the 3D printed medical equipment being developed and manufactured by Glia to fill the gaps in provision of healthcare?
Glia's probably most known projects are the stethoscope and the face shield. So the face shield, Tarek can jump into a little bit about that response to COVID and how quickly you can adapt in medicine and open source. But the stethoscope was kind of that initial project. So that was validated to the quality of a Lipman 3, which is the gold standard stethoscope used in Canada. And that was a very proud achievement. I think it really cemented that 3D printed open source medical devices are feasible. They can be high quality. And it's something that we're very proud of. The tourniquet as well, it was developed alongside the stethoscope very early on in response to the need for these devices in Gaza. So the tourniquet is another one of Glia's kind of classic early devices that were developed that we still continue to work with today. Other things that are currently in the works is an otoscope. So the device used to look in the ears requires the 3D printing, a battery, and some lens. And that can create a very, very good medical device. There's also in the horizon, electrocardiogram. So a portable, small, low-cost ECG. Also, dialysis is very far in the future, but we really want to try and get our hands on that and work around that. And 3D printing itself is always, always developing. So there'll be a lot more coming.
If these projects sound fascinating, we encourage you to visit glia.org and take a look at their designs and assembly. There are also links to the open source GitHub repositories if you're interested in using or modifying the designs. And you might be tempted to, when you hear how much it costs to produce these high-quality medical devices. To put costs of 3D printing into perspective, the most common filaments, which you can think of as the ink cartridge in a classic printer, cost approximately $20 per kilogram. As published in PLOS ONE, the Glia stethoscope, produced at a cost of $2.4, was comparable to the Lipman Cardiology 3 stethoscope, which costs several hundred dollars on the market. The Glia otoscope costs $15 to produce, and an industry standard otoscope costs upwards of $1,000. These prohibitive costs make stethoscopes a luxury item in developing countries such that many healthcare professionals have never used one. And they equally create a large dent in the bank for the average student in various healthcare professions, including future doctors, nurses, and paramedics. Thus, thousands of Glia stethoscopes have been distributed to date and used to improve patient care in the developing and developed world where they were previously unavailable. Can you think of any event in recent years when countries all over the world, developing and developed alike, were afflicted by resource limitations? Starts with a C, ends in COVID-19. We've previously published our podcast series entitled The COVID Diaries, in which Dr. Sarah Luckakitopoulos, an emergency physician at London Health Sciences Center, recounted personal stories of working on the front lines at the start of the pandemic. We'll play an excerpt of her anecdote of the personal protective equipment, or PPE, shortages in the hospital.
We are facing a critical shortage of PPE, personal protective equipment, in our hospitals. As frontline healthcare staff, we are currently limited to 2 masks per shift in an effort to conserve equipment. But wearing just 2 masks per shift means wearing a mask longer than it's meant to be worn, not changing masks between patients as we normally would, and limiting eating and drinking so that we're not removing and replacing contaminated equipment. We often reach the end of our 8 or 9 hour shifts with dry mouths, thirsty and hungry, because our drive to conserve a precious resource overcomes our drive to take a sip of water or nibble on a granola bar. It's difficult. Our faces are itchy. The backs of our ears are rubbed raw, never getting any respite from the straps that loop behind them to keep the masks in place. Anything that allows us to stretch our equipment out just a little longer means that we're more likely to have equipment to use when we care for the next patient. We are scared and frustrated at not being better protected, but most of us are willing to make that sacrifice.
In the face of these critical PPE shortages, Glia was again in a position to help.
In terms of responses to the pandemic, the face shield was one of our biggest responses to the pandemic in Canada. There were other projects that we started and researched and that didn't really make it into clinical practice. In terms of how that happened, we've been basically addressing the issue of managing a broken supply chain for years. Fundamentally, Glia takes local resources and figures out a way to make high quality, affordable, locally producible medical devices with them. And Gaza had been doing that for years when our supply chain broke in Canada. When we started thinking about how to respond to the pandemic, it was the engineers in Gaza who'd been working for years making things there, who turned us on to face shields, who got us working on face shields, and who gave us the expertise to scale up. Because in Canada, we had been doing some production at that point, but by and large, we had been doing research and development while they were doing production in Gaza. Instead, our Gazan colleagues were able to help us with a bit of the R&D on face shields and some of the design, lots of the engineering happened there. And we were able to learn from them and take the mass production expertise that they had and apply it to the Canadian context. So it was really quite remarkable, because a lot of people look at this kind of work and they think of it selfishly. Well, this isn't helping me, so why should I contribute? And of course, this kind of work doesn't need to ever help us. However, one of the interesting and beautiful pieces is that when you are involved in solidarity and mutual aid with other people, well, that's a two-way street. And you can see a lot of return like we did during the pandemic.
If there's been one silver lining to the COVID-19 pandemic, it's that it has showed us what the global community is capable of when we stand in solidarity towards a common goal. Take the astonishing rate of vaccine development, for example, which you can learn more about in our previous episode, #COVIDVaccines. Glia's 3D printed face shields are a perfect example of how this same multidisciplinary global collaboration, combined with open source sharing of research and development, may offer quick and effective solutions to the world's needs. That's the end of this episode in our 2-part series. If you enjoyed this episode, you definitely won't want to miss part 2. We'll be back with our guests, Dr. Tarek Loubani and Raiden Garapik, for a deeper dive into how 3D printing and open source medicine are creating a fundamental shift in the future of healthcare and how you can get involved. Don't forget to like and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and wherever you listen to your favorite podcast to make sure you get updated on new content. My name is Hugh Kim, and I'll catch you in the next episode.